Here we go.
My valiant brothers, attend my words. Our struggle is righteous and shall call upon all of our strength. Death before dishonor. Fail not the Emperor. Follow me, my brothers, to the heart of chaos.
Now, your host, the Librarian.
Greetings, brothers. We're here with another episode of Fight Night, the official podcast of the 40K Fight Club. On the line, we have none other than Paul DiPonio, who, by the way, Mac software makes you say Paul Dipping, so I had to go through some trouble. Yeah,
it All right.
completely messed up your last name. But we have the Prophet, Primarch, and co-founder of the Fight Club. Paul, how are things going?
Things are going well.
It's been a while since we've actually talked through voice.
Yeah, it's been a very long time, actually.
I think the last time we actually had a conversation, you were marveling over the fact how the Demon Prince had so many options. I believe you said you could take wings. And wings.
I remember that conversation, yeah. Wings and marks.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So, you know, that just starts it off right now. You know, how did you actually get into the hobby?
Oh, man, I used to do a lot of role-playing games, you know, like I assume the vast majority of us did, and got into Warhammer Fantasy role-play, got the stuff going there, and then found the Rogue Trader stuff, got going in that, and off it went.
Yeah. So that sounds like that's a pretty typical way for most of us to begin. We start, and then we realize we're pushing plastic miniatures more than just going ahead and role-playing it out.
I think so. I think the role-playing has a great, great side of it. The miniature side is a much more social type of thing, I think.
Yeah, a little more social than role-playing for some odd reason. I've never really understood it, but everyone kind of identifies that a little bit better. Mm-hmm. So what are your favorite armies? And I know this, but you know most people don't, so we're just going to go ahead and ask the obvious question.
Well, Chaos is what I've played for pretty much the entire time. Since it's the first podcast, I will divulge something that I don't think anyone ever knows, but I used to have a Blood Angels army. Way long ago, I had a Blood Angels army that I had painted up. So, yeah, but it's Chaos now. It was Chaos in the beginning, short stint into Blood Angels, which is practically Chaos. And, so that's what I enjoy.
I'm kind of blown away now. You actually had a Blood Angels army.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What is it about Chaos that draws you? Why only them?
It's the background. I just love the image of the unsung hero type thing, which I really do feel Chaos is. And you know, there's a lot of perspective things on it, but
the unsung hero.
Oh yeah.
I gotta know, what do you mean by that? Because you know, I see them as murder, death, and mayhem.
Really? Yeah. And you don't see that from a society that, you know, kills its own people constantly and feeds them to a dead corpse. And
that's irrelevant. That's not what I'm talking about here.
Yeah, right. I don't know. I just think that Chaos had the right idea.
An open society.
Before they were Chaos, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But it's open as long as you're the one determining what open means, right?
Well, you know, that's how it goes.
It's all good, then, huh?
It's all good.
So, Have you actually succeeded in having one of every kind of Chaos army out there?
Yeah. The one that I've not had the most of has been actually Word Bearers. Even though I like them, they're one of my top favorite for their fluff type thing. But I just never got any Chaos Marines built for them or painted or anything like that, apart from a Dark Apostle.
I'm kind of drawn to Word Bearers too. They're actually, for me, more of the anti-hero than any other Chaos army. All of them are very martial, very warrior, but the Word Bearers were trying to be pure. They were trying to do something good and just kind of fell along the way.
Right. Yeah. They had all this devotion and you know loyalty that just wasn't returned to them. So they ended up going someplace else.
Yeah, exactly.
You know how that went.
So do you get into the Chaos Demons now that they have their own own army?
I do. I had a lot of demons. Still do have a lot of demons. So when the Codex came out for it, I was very happy about that. And I've liked a little bit more of the options than the current Chaos Codex, but I won't go into that too far. But but yeah, so I do the demons as well, and then in fantasy, I have enough demons to do fantasy demons. So
well, that then had to be real easy for you, because I know that you used to stay away from fantasy, played it every once in a while, but
yeah. Well, I still do. I'm not as much of a fan of fantasy as 40K.
But it has to be easy to make that leap now that you got an army that it easily switches over.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes it much, much easier to do. I don't have to spend money on it, yeah.
So what's your favorite aspect of the hobby? You know, there's the painting and the sculpting. Geez. And.
Well, I can tell you that my least favorite aspect is actually the painting. But
I think everybody can say that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think some people really, really enjoy that. I don't know. Unless I'm painting with other people, it makes it difficult for me. But I think the favorite aspect, I think it's just the imagery of it, you know,
the pageantry.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, putting on my best dress and going out and hanging out at the shop or whatever, and you know, just talking geek stuff.
Oh yeah, getting stuff with your friends and everything.
Right, right.
Yeah, the actual social. So, right. It doesn't bug you playing with an unpainted army?
It does. It does bug me every time I do it, especially if, well, I have fully painted armies, and if I go anyplace new or I'm going to play someone for the first time, I always play with my fully painted stuff.
So if I'm getting ready to go up to Lansing to get a game in, what is a typical game with the Prophet going to be like? Is there going to be a lot of trash talk, or are we just going to sit down and have a beer and play a game?
It's going to be more that side of it. In fact, tonight I'm going to be playing a game with Center Mass, and we said, all right, well, let's just, you know, get a game in, and said, all right, 10,000 points, bring everything you got. And so
10,000 points.
Yeah. We're going to make it a multi-night game, but a typical game, I don't know. I used to be very, very competitive, and I've kind of evolved past that now. And I still play competitive games, and I want the person to be competitive. But it's far more important for me now to be able to look back and say, hey man, that was a great time, you know?
So, and you actually touched on that a little bit. So what is your idea of a competitive game? You know, I mean, admitting the fact that a lot of people can get into the tournament scene and that is their hobby for them.
Right.
How does that fit into your gaming? If really you're just sitting down and you want to just have a good game, win or lose, where does the tournament aspect fit for you?
Well, for me, I tend to stay away from tournaments, but I think that they are a somewhat good addition to the hobby as a whole. I don't think that they encompass the hobby, and I think that they are just a little add-on for it. But when you focus, you know, that as your main portion of the hobby, then I think it hurts the overall hobby.
So it's not what the hobby is, it's what the hobby needs.
Yeah, I do think that tournaments, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a tournament. I think instead of using the word tournament, I should be using the word event. I think large events are essential to the hobby because it's the social aspect. It brings together to do the same stuff. You know, and to really, for me, it recharges my batteries. I told a guy that just the other day, and because I didn't get it out to Adepticon this year, and we were talking about it, he made it out there, and it recharges you. You get in there, and when you get back, you want to paint every single model you have. You want to build new terrain. It just makes you get you going again. So I think those things, those big events, are essential to keeping the hobby strong.
Tournaments to go together.
Yeah. And just do stuff. Tournaments specifically, I think those have a place as well. Just not the focus.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's a pretty good perspective. It's because some people do really get into that and that alone. Right. So switching gears a little bit then, let's talk about a little about the 40K Fight Club. How did it begin, and then why did you take it into the public with the chapter program?
Well, because this was back in kind of a competitive era, Hornblower and I came up with the idea of doing basically a domination table type thing. And then we built this little group, and we called it the 40K Fight Club, and we'd get together and we'd, you know, play games and trash talk each other and, you know, have a good time. We were all there with the same intentions. So if you have the same intentions, all the trash talk is good to go. It's when you have, you know, one person that's there with a different idea than another. But so that's how it actually got started. It lasted that way a couple months. We were doing, you know, campaigns and stuff. We wanted people that we could rely upon to get the games in, to be there every week, to do that kind of stuff. And eventually we decided, you know what, we might as well get a site up. So we put the 40K Fight Club site together. Then we decided, we gave it the fortress all the time. We should open it up to everybody there. So we opened it up and, you know, told people around the fortress in Lansing. People started getting on, talking there. Then I said, you know what? Well, it's a public thing now. I should tell some of these other people that I know from email lists. There was like the 40K Chaos list, the Iron Warriors Yahoo group, stuff like that I was on. And one of the guys, to transition into the chapters, one of the guys that I'd known for a long time on the list was a guy named Morgani, Richard, out of Kansas City. He and I were talking, and I'm pretty sure it was on the phone. We were chit-chatting about it, and I had invited him to come over and, you know, hang out on the Fight Club forums as well. It had been a little while, and he said, you know, man, you guys seem to have a good thing going down there. I wish we had, like, a site-type thing for our group as well. And so we got talking about it. I said, well, just use ours. You know, I'll make forums for you, for your area, and, you know, just do it from there. And when we got talking about it, we said, you know, and that's what developed into the first chapter. And at that time, Lansing wasn't technically a chapter. It was just, you know, Morgani's area was the first chapter, Kansas City chapter. And then we just went from there and rolled with.
And I remember that. I remember seeing your post come through the GL40K Yahoo group, which was the local large Michigan mailing list for 40K.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I had moved away from Detroit, so I couldn't game with the guys down there very regularly. I mean, me and Global Smack still get together every now and then, but I needed a club, so I started one, and then, you know, that's how the whole idea of trying to make a metro area chapter started.
Right.
And then that was successful.
Oh, geez, yeah.
And now what? Detroit has something like 3 or 4 chapters in itself?
Yeah. Well, if we count Taylor, it's like 4 chapters.
Yeah.
They're pretty close to you.
Yeah, so it's... Yeah,
not bad.
So are you surprised with the success of the Fight Club?
Initially I was, but, you know, I've been asked that a few times now, and the more I think about it, the less surprised I am, because I just don't think that there was a place like this out there. Because we definitely have a different focus on the forums. I mean, yeah, we talk rules, we talk all that stuff, but to me it feels more like a family-type location as opposed to a just general chit-chat about 40K stuff forum, where everyone's kind of anonymous. You just, you know, no one actually knows. I mean, well, some people might, but the vast majority don't know the other people. And it's a lot more harsh type of environment than the 40K Fight Club is. And that's something that Hornblower and I try to foster, is a much more real relationship between members of the site. And there are people on there that most likely I will never meet in person, but I feel like I know in person. That, you know, if they drove up and said, "Hey, man, I'm going to be up in the Lansing area." I'd say, "Well, freaking stop by and have a game, you know, whatever." It's a little bit different than that. So to answer your question, I'm not surprised, because I think once people feel what it's like to be part of 40K Fight Club family, then they go, "Wow, I wish I was here before. I can't believe I wasn't here already."
Right.
You know.
So is it, now comparing it to other clubs and other websites that support the hobby and other long ideals, and even chapter members' own questions about what the fight club's going to do and so forth, are there any real long-term plans, or it's just kind of management of chaos and trying to foster that community aspect and let the chapters kind of do what they need to do?
Well, yeah, we do have, you know, long-term plans on what we'd like to do with the fight club, but the main theme of that is supporting the chapters. I really look at the fight club as a support network for other clubs. So it's like a club of clubs type thing.
Right.
I really enjoy helping people get things organized. And,
great. Then, yeah, that's what we thought this podcast would be, is we talk a little bit about the groundings and how to start a club if you really don't even want to start a chapter, and then how you even just make that first step walking into the store and say, "Here I am. I want to be in a club, or I want to start one if there isn't one here."
Well, that's a full episode in and of itself on getting clubs going, but I would say that the main thing is to be familiar with the group. I mean, you don't just walk in and say, "I'm going to found a club," you know, with a bunch of strangers. You could. I don't think that's the best way to do it. It needs to be a group of like-minded individuals who have a common goal and decide to work together towards it. Once you have that, and that could be two people, then, I mean, look at Jeff and myself, then you have a direction to go. Then you can start, you know, laying down plans and putting together that vision of what you want to do.
Oh, very good. So, do you have anything currently on the hobby desk going on?
Oh, geez. Trying to catch up on the painting resolution. I really slacked off last month and didn't get my flamers done, so I got to get those done. And then I'm working on some screamers for that. I actually just picked up a bunch of spawn from some crazy guy selling them.
I know that guy's gone mad, hadn't he?
I think he has.
I'll get those out to the mail to you tomorrow, by the way.
All right, sounds good. Once I get those, I'm a big fan of spawn. I love to spawn things.
I do, too. So. I got a full set of them. I actually went hog wild on Apocalypse, and I actually bought three of those boxes.
Two of them
are assembled, and that third one's just going to sit there.
Okay. Well, I'll make good use out of it. So, yeah, so those types of things. The screamers, which actually I've wanted to do for a while. I think they'll be fun trying to get that fade out there. I'm not sure what my colors are going to be yet, but those, I have some plague bears sitting next to me that are partly done, and looking over at the shelf, I see a whole bunch of stuff that needs to be done.
So talking about the hobby aspect for a second, and this is our last question. We'll jump right into our news.
All right.
Now, with GW changing their paint line all the time,
mm-hmm.
what are your thoughts about the return or the lack of the return of Tentacle Pink? Go.
You know, I didn't use it for a very long time, but I actually like that color. It's a difficult color to make without having it itself. You could with some reds and whites and stuff, but Tentacle Pink, yeah, that's good to go.
You took a totally joke question and made it absolutely serious. I'm like, wow.
I'm a serious individual. So, and that was a bunch of BS anyway. I could care less about Tentacle Pink.
All right, so in the news, of course, we had the Blood Angels Codex come out. Personally, I myself am extremely hyped. This is actually the first release since War of the Rings that actually affects me. You know, I get them all. I've got the Tyranid Codex and the Orcs and whatever else came in between. But they would just sit for a couple weeks because I was like, well, I'm going to play them eventually, but I have it for the collection.
Right.
But Blood Angels are the first one that's actually just really kind of affecting me, and I'm pretty super jazzed about it. Although,
awesome.
I'm not going to go wild with the models. I mean, I have three companies of Angels, so I don't really know what
Slacker.
I'm behind, you know.
Right.
And I still have a first company of Terminators put together, so maybe I'll have four before it's over. But, you know, one of the things that I've really liked about Angels, and we talked about this a little bit on the boards out there, is that the Death Company is not a liability anymore. You know, in third edition, you couldn't take a shooting army, otherwise you'd probably get decimated in the Death Company when you had to roll randomly for every squad. And then in the PDF, if you didn't take the models, you were paying for it per Marine in your army anyways.
Yep.
So this way I can build the army the way I want, and the Death Company is just, you know, no, I don't want to. It's too expensive. So I'm really kind of digging that. So I can have a shooty Blood Angels army the way I want to. Maybe put some close combat craziness in there.
Yeah. Well, I think Blood Angels, actually going on the fluff side of it, they were I haven't read all the fluff out of the new Codex, so I don't know what they've, you know, evolved into or evolved the fluff into, but they used to be a very Codex specific chapter. They followed the Codex of Stardays with their organization. And then, you know, had the Death Company thing going on because of the flaw in their gene. But yeah, having a tactical setup, almost Ultramarine style setup, Blood Angel, in my opinion, is a fluffy way to play them.
Yeah, and that's still in the background of the book. Yeah.
Oh, good.
In fact, kind of really emphasize that a little bit more, that they were one of the few chapters, if not the only one, that actually believed in what Marnius was trying to do.
Right.
So,
Gilliam.
Yep,
Gilliam.
Gilliam, yeah.
Yeah.
I get those guys mixed up sometimes.
That's all right. You're only a loyalist.
I should probably turn my veteran card in now.
Right. Yeah, all right. But library, you have a lot of stuff to keep track of. So.
Exactly. I got all the books.
Right.
And that's about as far as it goes.
But as you were saying.
Yeah, but, you know, you get a lot more options. And, you know, one thing that kind of saddens me a little bit is I think the emphasis on librarians is kind of becoming standard across the board, and I'm not sure why. Because I used to play Relictors, and that was a gimmick White Dwarf chapter approved army that really didn't survive past the Eye of Terror campaign years ago. But they were based off librarians. They didn't have anything else in their leadership. And then we get the Blood Ravens from Dawn of War that had a high emphasis on librarians, and that actually people are beginning to think might be a gene seed based Thousand Sons army.
Right.
And so now the Blood Angels have mass librarians all over the place.
Yeah, I was surprised to see how heavy the Blood Angels can push the librarians, but again, I haven't read the fluff out of the new Codex, so I'm not sure if it's fluff driven now or just rules driven.
Well, it kind of is background-driven. I mean, they say that Sanguinius was the most psychic, other than Magnus, of the Primarchs.
Right.
So when he had the when he fell, when Horus killed him, you know, the backlash was psychic, and it hit all the Marines.
Right.
But, you know, if you really peel back all the fluff for all the Loyalist Marines and even the Chaos Marines, they all are somewhat based off the same thing. They just emphasize one trait like greed or hate or love or perfection a little bit more than the others.
Right.
So, but still, yeah, it was a little bizarre to see Blood Angels get the librarian treatment and nobody else.
Well, you know, someone has to be first.
True.
So.
True.
Yeah.
I am, you know, I'll probably say this until they make the new Codex, but Sanguinor, I can't resolve myself with this model. If I have one massive complaint, it's this one. Sanguinor sounds like a bad Japanese mega monster.
Yeah, it does.
In the first
Godzilla
place.
Versus Sanguinor, right.
And then in the second place, if I wanted to have a Saint Celestine model in my army, I'd take Sisters of Battle.
That's true. That's actually hits on something interesting that I don't know if I'm a fan of, is the non-uniqueness of things now. Because, you know, that was a very sister or witch hunters specific, very unique thing. And now to have something so similar to it.
right.
Blood Angels.
Right.
You know, and then you had, you know, before Gene Stealers were the king of the rending, now everybody has rending.
Right.
You know, it seems like they're taken and, I don't know.
They just love it so much.
Yeah, yeah. They go, well, that was good, so let's give it a whole bunch to this one.
Right. Well, it's like somebody said about the new Beastmen models when they saw the Minotaurs. He said, wow, looks like someone learned how to sculpt muscles and then just went nuts.
Yep.
But, you know, that's actually a good point. You know, coming back to when we talked about the Chaos Codex when it first came out, you know, when everything's not unique, that's what happens when you try to come to a balanced position on your armies and make them more simple and easier and make the rules all streamlined,
right.
Is that you lose all these options. But I have to say, even in the Chaos Codex, the Demon Prince in it today, if you try to point it out using last time's Codex, you can't do it. And he's more powerful. If you follow the rules, you make a bigger Demon Prince.
Right. And less points, yeah.
Yeah, and then second of all, that Demon Prince is pretty much how people ran him anyways. I mean, I don't know anybody that took, like, Demonic Venom or Demonic Fire. I mean, you probably did because you made a point to play with every variation you could think of.
I tried to, yeah. And even over the years, I still hadn't played with every variation I could come up with in the last Codex. But I remember talking with a guy at GW that was working on the new Chaos Codex with playtesting. And he said that the idea was they were going to move it towards, not to get too focused on the Chaos stuff, but they were going to get moving towards getting rid of options that no one ever uses or building in options that everyone always uses. And actually, the Demon Prince was one of the ones that we talked about. And he said, what's going to happen is we're going to take things that people always use and we're just going to make it part of the Demon Prince.
Yeah.
You know, demonic stature, demonic strength, you know, all those types of things. Wings, you still get the option. But
yeah,
so they were just going to build it right in and then get rid of things, like you said, demonic fire, that no one ever used. My argument was, well, some people use them. And
right.
Just because a lot of people don't use them doesn't mean that it's not good to have the options.
Right, right, right. Well,
but yeah.
Careful what you wish for, right?
Right, right, exactly.
A GW can never win.
Yeah, that's very true as well. GW never wins.
So yeah.
They always mess it up, right? Yeah, here we are, you know, what, 22 years into 40K proper, I think, now. Yeah, it was 88, 87, Rogue Trader, somewhere in there. And they're still here, still making models, still making rules, and a lot of people still playing. So
right.
Say what you will, they're still here.
Exactly. Also, what GW has come out with that I noticed was someone was showed me is their new glue. Mm-hmm. They've done what all the hobbyists have, and they have the super thin, the maxi thin glue.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen their new glue yet.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. It's got a brush on it.
Really? And
yeah. So because you're getting a minuscule amount.
Okay.
It's a cheaper price, but you don't get a full bottle. It's maybe a third of the bottle. And I went nuts. I was like, what? I'm going to pay more for this or less for this? You apply it with a brush. You don't need much on there. And the store actually has a Terminator, a Metal Librarian Terminator.
Uh-huh.
They'll hand it to you. I almost broke the staff off trying to take the arm off the
model. Really?
And then when I handed it back, I said, yeah, that's pretty strong. They pitched it across the mall, and it smashed in the wall and did not come apart.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I'll pick some of that up and try it.
My
nemesis.
Yeah, I've got to try this too. And it dries instantly. I've tried putting a couple of their models together with it, so you no longer have to cheat and get the accelerator and another glue to get it to work. But no, it was instant.
Wow. Well, I'll give that a try. Glue is always a challenge.
Yeah.
Things together.
Getting the big globs and you're so, well, that could be a spore or a wound or something.
Right.
Well, this concludes another episode of the Fight Night podcast of the 40K Fight Club. I'm the Librarian.
And I'm the Prophet.
Saying, just shut up and roll the dice.
Hoorah.
You know, I can make you say things if I get you to say enough of the words I want.
All right. Test, test, test. Am I being recorded?
Yep.
I am so thankful you didn't ask me to say your last name. And now, here's Jerry Bialucini. Biolchini. Chini. Biolchini.
I plead the fifth.
Not a hockey club, a hobby club. The official podcast of the 40K Fight Club. Visit us on the web at www.40kfightclub.com. That's www.40kfightclub.com. Or .com.
Hey, this is Son of the Lion, and I wanted to talk today about a little aspect of our game called the metagame. I'm going to start with the metagame and what it means, how rule changes from 5th edition basic rules to new codexes and changes in your group affect the metagame, and how you play to the metagame. Do you do it? Do you not? And then the benefits of balance priming. All right, the easiest way to define the metagame is to say that it is a particular subset or theme of all the possible armies being played in your area, such as mechanized lists, horde lists, gunline, or assault. As a result, it'll depend a lot on the people involved and how long they've been playing, as well as the armies they play. The metagame is also constantly changing. The biggest changes come from modifications to the basic rule set, as seen by the changes to scoring units and vehicles in 5th edition. Next, you look at the new codex releases and possibilities therein in combination with the above-mentioned rule changes. Finally, army changes or additions in your local group will also alter the dynamic of the group as a whole. Let's give some examples. 4th edition armies with a bare minimum of troops with as many elite troops to hammer the enemy as possible with lots of vehicle backup, especially things like land speeders with marines. The release of 5th edition, the focus suddenly shifted to troops and vehicles of all calibers got a huge nerf back. The armies therefore changed to reflect this new required playstyle, with troops now taking the center stage and being even more popular with the prevalence of cover saves and dedicated transports as a shield and means of last minute objective threat. Next we look at the new codex edition. 5th edition Marines saw the loss of traits, but the inclusion of characters that allow for a lot of variation, like pike armies, stern guard, and terminators as troops, etc. With the change to the vehicle damage table, mech guard and mechanized army lists in general will also become increasingly popular. At least Blood Angels, Space Wolves, and the new Tyranid Codex bring back killer characters, bikers, and nasty assaults. All these little things will see big changes in your gaming group. What used to work against Gunline Guard doesn't work against mech as much. Nizilla is dead because of the changes to scoring units and increase in point costs. They can still bring a healthy number of toughness 6 wounds to the table. For example, my 2,000 point list has 32 wounds of toughness 6. In addition, all armies now need to fear psychers, as you'll see much more of the fear counters on the battlefield. The last thing to think about is the addition or change of an army in your local group with a new player. Do you have a new play style and possibly a new army to counter? Malthus Vanguard, for example, won't really work against Horde Nids. People starting new armies offer a similar challenge. Used to playing against Marines and now you're up against Tyranids, how you compensate? All these things affect the metagame in your area and you're left with a choice. Do you play to it or do you do something different? If you have a small group that largely plays similar armies, designing your army to be strong in a local metagame is good. That's all you plan on doing. If you plan on playing in a larger area or in tournaments though, this can be disastrous. If you're prepared for and only really good at stopping a small number of armies, you will suffer in tournament play and in groups outside of your own local group, where you're more likely to encounter something different than what you're used to playing. This is why you need balanced armies. A strong tactical base and enough specialization to stop anything. Could you be more effective? Sure, but you could also come up against something you're completely unprepared for. Balanced armies are the key to success and have served me particularly well in what I do. I may not win every game, but I'm never caught unprepared either. The idea is, if you can take away the worry about what your opponent is playing, you're already ahead of the game. Have a plan, execute it. Doesn't matter what your army you're facing against is. If you're prepared for anything, you'll do fine. Let the dice decide the outcome, not the army list you and your opponent chose. All right, that's it for me today. Hopefully I'll be back again soon to talk to you about something else. I'm longing to